Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today I'm happy to welcome back Sherry V. Brooks. And we're going to talk about her new book and also the newest play that she's written for Sherry's Playhouse. It'll probably be around Christmas time, but we're really excited about it. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
G'day at this very civilized hour.
Way down south.
As south as you can go.
Yeah, the other side of the earth.
Yes, with no hurricanes.
Right.
All.
Right.
Yes. We don't get hurricanes in Sydney.
Yeah, no hurricanes there. We have plenty here. And we had an earthquake here too. Not here in California, but in Mexico.
Yeah. Oh dear.
So
the end of time.
Lively
is,
here.
Near.
Yes. It's very lively here. It was in central Mexico.
Yeah. I think it was, 6.8 or something?
No, it was an 8.1.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
Tsunami warning and everything.
So you got floods, earthquake, and
hurricanes and tornadoes.
Yeah, I think I'll stay home.
You just have these huge spiders to worry about.
Oh, yeah. Spiders, sharks, killer ants, killer kangaroos, jellyfish. Yeah, we got them all.
Yep.
We have no hurricanes, though.
Yeah, but you got all that lively wildlife.
Yes, although up in the north of Australia we have cyclones. So if you go
bad.
Up north, that's bad, yes. Down south. We have huge, I was going to say snowstorms, but we don't have those. Hail. And stuff like that, but no, we're generally well behaved down here.
Yeah, I mean, we get earthquakes, but that's like every 10, 20 years, so it's not here in California, so it's not that big a deal. But I feel
you're
sorry
for
the
big
people.
One.
I've been hearing that since I was 6 years old.
It's going to happen. I've seen the disaster movies.
Yeah, I know, the newest one, which is The Rock, which was ridiculous. Some of it was so stupid.
I haven't seen that one, but I've seen all the, I saw one which had a volcano coming out of in the middle of in Los Angeles, which is absolutely hysterical. So,
Yeah, they have all kinds of crazy ideas. What was it, the volcano that was in the middle of La Brea Tar Pit? I mean, I don't know where they get these ideas.
That was good. I like that. As long as it's not real life, I like
it. I'm trying to remember who was in that. I think it was Tommy Lee Jones, who I like. Great actor.
Is that?
But I think that was.
Is that the one where they had the... The train and somebody dissolved in the puddle, in the lava?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
It was another dumb movie. But, I mean, the part that made all of the Los Angelinos laugh, or ex-Los Angelinos, my brother and myself, was with Raya Tarpet.
Yeah. Well, they're bubbling along anyway.
Well, they've been bubbling for centuries.
Exactly. So a little more bubbling won't hurt.
But that's too funny. So do you want to start with your book, your new book on the series?
Sure.
Or do you want to start with the play? Which would you like
Let's
first?
Let's go with the play.
Okay, the play. I'm really excited. I haven't read it yet, but she's told me a little bit about it. Go ahead. We don't want to give away. We just want to tantalize so people are interested, but we don't want to give away
yes.
the plot. So
okay.
go ahead.
Okay. An Egyptian treasure. Sounds intriguing, doesn't it? Okay, it's 1948. And as the year is drawing to a close, Zoe's planning a surprise for Eva. She enlists the help of Eleanor and together make one of Zoe's zaniest ideas come true. So Eva, Zoe, Eleanor, Henry and Earl are back. It's a feel-good romantic comedy that will just make you smile. It's all about a promise, love with a dash of and a madcap Zoe in the land of milk and honey. So there you go. It's just fun.
It sounds lovely. I can't wait.
Yeah, well, I
still haven't read it yet. She just finished writing it, folks.
Yes.
It's hot off her fingers.
Last night, actually. I finished it last night. And it was good. It was, if I do say so myself, a pat on the head for me. I just felt good reading it, you know. It's one of those things that it's not going to solve the world's problems. It's not going to solve any kind of heart-hitting things that we have to endure.
No.
It's just a feel-good romantic comedy that will make you just sit back and laugh. That's the whole idea. So,
thank God for comedies. Thank God. I've had a very rough year, and that's one of the things that's helped me through. Even though somebody I really respect recently passed away, Jerry Lewis, I met him several
yes.
times. He was the nicest man, especially when my brother and I were young when we first met him. And they've been showing a lot of his movies, and you just sit and you laugh and you walk. I mean, that's what he was great at, just making you laugh.
Yes, the power of humor.
Yeah.
I think one
Very
of Jerry's,
healing.
Yes, it was the power of humor, and I grew up watching Jerry Lewis's films as well, and it was. In a time when everything is dark and so forth, you need somebody to just lighten up your world for a short time. And I think what Jerry Lewis did and what other people do with their humour is paramount, because you can't have all dark and gritty, and it kind of gets you down, because real life is dark and gritty as it is. You know what I
exactly.
mean?
Exactly.
So,
yep.
So
exactly.
we need humor in there. So, an Egyptian treasure, kind of that mold. So, it's
sweet.
Kind of fun.
From what you've
it's
told
sweet.
Me, it's so sweet, and I love that.
Yes.
I love something that's sweet and funny and loving and just adorable. I mean, that's worth everything.
Yeah, and the idea of Zoe just driving like a maniac down a Sydney street and trying to and just be exhilarated by the experience with the sun on her face and just a joy. I think that is also because we're in the middle of winter, or should I say now spring. The idea that summer is on the way and that sort of thing also helps. So An Egyptian Treasure, I had so much fun writing it. And I think it's gonna kind of fit a niche there that's needed.
The thing is that from what you've told me, it's just, I mean, I haven't read it yet, so it's really hard. But I mean, from what the descriptions and stuff, it's going to make everybody laugh, and it's going to make everybody go,
yes.
Oh!
Yes. And it's also, it also goes to the core of when you promise something to someone, even if it takes you years to fulfill, a promise is a promise,
Yep.
So Zoe is fulfilling a promise she made to Eva back in Egypt when they were on their way out of Greece and to Australia. And which kind of feeds back into the book, the first Zoe's journal book, which is more about surviving the peace. So, and then actually the play fits into the second book, Displaced in the Land of Pharaohs. But it all feeds back into the previous novels and the previous stories. Even if you haven't read them, this play gives you an idea of where they were at in 1946 and where they're at now in 1948. So, yeah, it's a little bit different, and as zany and as crazy as our last play was last year, A Ouija Night, that was a bit of a darker tone with a lot of humour in it, and that had to deal with sexual harassment and the difficulties one encountered in the 1950s with women working and so forth and being harassed. This, even though that sounds weird, there was no humour in it, there was. This is more humour all the way. It's sort of like, it's feel good from the first page to the last. So, and I'm talking up my play. So pat on the head for me.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Now she just has to mail it. Now she has to email it to me so I can cast, direct, and produce.
and I should stop. And I should stop tweaking it, because, as you know, authors don't stop tweaking.
Well, you know, the actors are going to want to make their own little adjustments anyway.
Yes. I'm so looking forward to the actors getting a hold of this. I'm really looking forward to it, because they did such a super, fantastic job with A Ouija Night. I thoroughly enjoyed that. So
thank you.
I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. Yeah, it's great. There's not a lot of, I think the main characters, of course, are Eva, Zoe, Eleanor, Henry and Earl. And Henry and Earl have their own little thing going, where it's quite funny once you read it, because it's so out of place in Australia. And I won't spoil it, because if I spoil it, I'll go on and describe the whole thing, which is kind of defeats the purpose. So,
yeah. Okay. That's good.
Don't let me ramble on.
Okay. You have a new book to the series of what's the new one about?
Okay, I am taking a break from the actual main series. I shouldn't, but I'm on book 7. I'm going back. I had this idea that I should pick up where In the Blood of the Greeks left off, which is basically what happened to them after the war had ended. And between books 1 and 2 in the series, in the Intertwined Soul series, where They were in Greece. They survived the war. And then, oh, I just spoiled it for everyone. Sorry. And they went to Australia. So what happened in those intervening, in those missing years, basically? So I thought, let's write about it. And I'm doing it in a first-person kind of journal type thing, where you hear Zoe's voice describe everything and all the events. And the first one is called Surviving the Peace. And it's an interesting title because after the war had ended in Greece, World War II, there wasn't really any peace because the British had inserted themselves and tried to remove the communists because the communists had created this fantastic and very effective resistance to the Germans. So, and then the English had a problem with the communists being such a powerful force. So they tried to stamp them out, which in turn created a civil war. Now, in the middle of all of that, if you tried, there is the thing that you have to leave Greece, and Zoe, Eva, and Henry had to get out of Greece before the civil war erupted. And then into that mix, you have the hunting for collaborators and traitors, and oh, it got very, very vicious, very ugly, very brutal. So they have to survive the peace. They survived the war, but they have to survive the peace. Well, and
no, I was just reacting. I went,
Oh, right. So we find ourselves at the point in time where they have to make a decision and they have to leave, and the journey to Crete, and they get immersed in the resistance there before they can escape Greece entirely. So it's all about surviving and getting out, and describing the whole how one needs to. It's not enough that the war was over and yes, you survived it. So what happens afterwards? And that's the case in any war. Okay, you've strived and you fought back. So what happens after? And that's the whole, well, that sounds very dark and gruesome. It's not. It's all about, it's all about the love, and it's all about what one would do for others. And it takes a little bit of history. Well, actually, it takes a lot of bit of history. Throws in Eva, Zoe, and Henry. And you have a story about also about hope and courage. And I'm sorry.
That's really fascinating.
I love story about unsung heroes because you tend to hear about the ones obviously that are more high profile, but you don't hear about the priests or the nuns or the shepherd boys or stuff like that who were brave and courageous and had shaped the outcome of the war. So, it's the little guys. It's the unsung heroes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. I've always been fascinated by what, I'm Jewish, and one of the things that we call people who help save Jews were righteous Christians.
Yes.
I've always been fascinated by... Yeah, they're fascinating. The people who just stuck their necks out to help in any way they could. Changing wording on a list in France, a French person under the Nazis, he actually died because he did this, saved thousands and thousands of people's lives by just making little changes on so they didn't know that these people were Jewish. And he wasn't Jewish. He was just doing it because he hated what they were doing to these innocent people. There wasn't just one person who did that. There were many people who did things like that. This one gave up his life. He was in France to
yeah.
save these people. But there were people who Mia in Anne Frank, she was a Christian. She was just a clerk. What she risked every time she helped, she ended up going to a concentration camp because she was helping not just their family, but several families. There's so many stories of people who, risked their lives. It's fascinating.
In Greece, you had priests, Greek Orthodox priests shielding the Jews. You had in Larissa and Thessaloniki, or Salonika as it's called, there were huge concentrations of Greeks, Greek Jews, and the people actually shielded them. Of course, they couldn't shield everybody, and they couldn't save everybody, but they did their very best.
Yes.
And I recently, a couple of years ago, I had a chat with the Jewish Museum of Greece, because I was doing research, and I had asked them to use some of their images for the companion book that I was writing to In the Blood of the Greeks, and one thing led to another, and their stories were invaluable collection that they had of Greeks, Greek Orthodox Christians helping. Hang on a moment. Helping Greek Orthodox Christians. We're helping Jews escape. And they were doing their very best in trying to protect them. And one of the huge things to come out of that discussion for me was me discussing with them my books, and in particular In the Blood of the Greeks and the companion book. And they made the offer to me, can we actually read your book? Can you send us the book? So I thought, oh, that's cool. I can send it to them. More than happy to do it, because I'm using some of the material for the companion book. And then I
right.
get an email saying they wanted to put it in their museum. Stop writing right this now. That would be the highlight, and I think that is the highlight of my writing to date, and I think it'll be forever, because
that's
it was
lovely.
So important to me to tell that story, and it's somewhere in the Jewish museum in Athens, and so if you're ever in Athens, go by the Jewish museum. The Greek Museum, the Jewish Museum, and it's going to be there. How cool is that?
That's really cool.
So,
that's something to be proud of, Mary.
Yeah, well, that blew my mind, and I think my grandmother and my grandfather would have been extremely proud of that. If nothing else I ever do in my writing career, I think that would be the highlight for me, because it
that's
achieved
really cool.
something that, Yeah. And it totally blew my mind to think that something I wrote honored that way. So, yeah. So, getting back to the Jewish Holocaust in Greece was quite brutal, where it destroyed the populations of Larissa and Thessaloniki, because after
they
that
they were original people to that area. That's one of the things I remember reading.
Yes.
They were not part of pogroms or returning.
No.
And those are people that have been there for centuries, families that have
yes,
been in
right.
Greece for centuries that they destroyed.
Yes, yeah. And the thing is that they recently, when they had the 70th anniversary of Auschwitz, there was an article where Greeks who were still living and who were trying to save the Jews. There was an article, I'll send you the link, and it was so moving, how the efforts they made to save Jews. And if they were caught, they would have been executed. Because
mm-hmm.
the retaliation in Greece by the Germans and the Italians was, in particular the Germans, was quite brutal. It was brutal. It was war crimes. Then again, the whole Holocaust was a war crime.
The whole war was like that, wherever it was.
The whole war was a war crime.
Yeah.
There's never honor in war. So, and the thing is that the Greeks did everything they could, including the clergy. Because the church was so powerful in Greece at the time, and they tried to shield Jews, and that goes back to In the Blood of the Greeks, where Eva is, despite her being a prisoner herself, she tries and saves the Jews by forging identity papers and stuff. So it was an all-round effort. And so many unsung heroes, people
yeah.
who did their bit, who saved the life, who in turn went on and had children of their own and so forth. And we don't know if I was a person back then and I had saved somebody's life, how that would impact down the generations. It's just something that you wonder about what would have happened if that person had lived, if that person had been saved, if that person could have done all that he could have. So it's quite thought-provoking.
It's really fascinating. It really is.
I've been fascinated by this. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to give you time to be able to talk about everything, so I wanted to... I mean, it is really fascinating, but we could go on about this for an entire hour. Because there's so much there, and the history of it is so intense.
I can talk for hours on this. Yeah.
It's very powerful. Anyway,
I
recommend her books highly as sort of like an introduction to what it's easier sometimes to read a historical novel than it is to read history, even though I love history.
Yes.
A book that doesn't have anything to do with Mary's series that really shows you what the Holocaust was like, especially in Poland, was Mila 18. If you really want to know what the Warsaw Ghetto and what the concentration camps were and what the Nazis did, that's a book to read. It's by
yeah.
Leon Uris.
Who was that by?
Author Leon Uris.
Okay.
Oh,
yes.
Survivor.
Yes. Yeah.
He wrote lots of books about the war,
yes.
But that's the one that always just tore my guts and I think I first read it when I was 15, and just I was devastated when I read that book.
The first book I read on the Holocaust, I was also 15, and it was called I Am Rosemary by Marietta D. Moshkin. That has a passage in it. I'm going to quote it because it's so profound. And I don't think I'm going to do it justice because I won't quote it completely, but too accurately. I haven't got the book in front of me. Where it says, to many, peace is symbolized by a dove with an olive branch. But to me, peace is the sight of an army sergeant or an army sergeant coming through the gates of the concentration camp. That was peace to her. And to read that as a 15-year-old and you wonder, I am living such a cushy life, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to read that from a fellow, I think the character was 16, it was very profound and quite moving. So,
another thing to read is, I don't know if a lot of our listeners know him, Glenn Ford was a wonderful actor, but he also was one of the people who and opened it up and saved a lot, helped the Holocaust survivors. And his account of it, it's not just moving, it's just, it reaches your soul.
I did not know that.
He said
it
affected his whole life.
Yeah. I have to look it up.
But yeah, Glenn Ford, the famous Glenn Ford, you know, Gilda with Rita Hayworth, that Glenn Ford.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. He was actually, when I was in Sunday school, well, it was Monday school when you're a teenager, we had a booklet about the Holocaust. It was, like, humongous. And one of the sections of the booklet was Glenn Ford talking about the Holocaust. He had a whole chapter.
Oh, I'll have to chase that down.
Yeah, it's like, I actually, my dad picked me up from school, and he said, so how was it? And I go, we read this section. It was about Glenn Ford. I go, do you think it was the actor? And Dad goes, what other Glenn Ford would it be?
There's only one Glenn Ford, right?
Yeah. I'm sure there's more, but I know what he meant.
Yeah. Send me the link to that. That sounds interesting.
I don't know if I have a link. I have the book somewhere. I just moved. Somewhere, packed somewhere. When I find it, I will send it to you.
In the abyss that is Sherry's.
I need some detectives. I need Miss Fisher here to get through.
Yes, you
all
need
these things.
I'll send it down. Send it up.
Because I'm about halfway through unpacking and just. I mean, I was so happy I found my photo album.
Yeah. How long did that take you?
Let's see. I've been here for... moved on Wednesday. It took more than a week.
Excuse me blowing my nose.
That's okay. Mary has a cold.
Mary had a bad cold.
Mary has a really bad cold.
Yes.
Anyway, that we let's not get into my moving hell. We'll move on. but when I find it, I'll scan it and send it to you. It's several chapters.
Yes.
It's several pages though.
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Okay, next part, we were going to talk about, you went to Vienna Retreat, and, oh dear, poor baby.
Oh, Sorry, excuse me.
You yes, okay?
Sorry. Yes, I'm glad okay. you can edit this.
You went to the Zena retreat. You went to the Zena retreat.
Zena retreat.
And did you want to talk about that? What you worked
yes.
on? Did what you learned? Anything
yes.
like that?
Yes. The Zenite retreat.
Okay.
Yes. You want me to talk?
Yes, please, dear.
The Zenite retreat. Now, get me in the mountains, away from everything. Oh, not everything. We have to have internet. Actually, the Zenite retreat does not have internet, and it's a welcome relief for some. And me, I'm kind of fish out of water when there's no net. But anyway, 130. Oh, no. Disconnected from the world. Oh, my God. 130-odd Zenith fans up in the mountains doing all sorts of fun stuff. And a weekend of sharing and loving, being together. That is fun. That is seriously fun. And
sounds really cool.
And yes, it is. It's very cool. It's very well organized by Penny Kavanagh and her team. And it's just amazing, an amazing event. And what with the last Zena convention in 2015, I think this picks up the baton and carries it forward. And it's all about the love. It's all about the greater good and raising money for charity and having a good time while you're doing it. And I had a thoroughly great time. I gave a couple of panels, one on a workshop on fiction and characters and stuff. But other than that, a couple of hours of my weekend, which was nothing, and just relaxed and did nothing, basically. Lazed about the pool while others were climbing ropes and archery and art and hiking up the mountains. Good God, there's bears up there. But anyway, they went, and it's a fantastic place, Canyon Creek. I totally loved it, and if you think about the whole weekend, 3 days or 3.5 days, it's all paid for, like the food, the accommodation, everything, and it's around $650. If you get in early, hint, hint. And with all of that, you get your accommodation and your food. And we're not talking about the food is chef-created. And 3 meals a day and all the coffee and tea and you can bring your alcohol and that sort of thing. It's all well-behaved. It's just insanely good idea. I loved it.
Sounds
so
great.
Yeah,
We're out of time.
Oh, well, that was the plug for Zenite Retreat. It's cool.
It goes so fast. It does. It's a half hour.
Yes.
It goes really fast.
Did we talk for an hour?
The show's a half hour.
Right. You're going to have to do a lot of editing.
Do you have anything that's coming up that you I think you said something about a magazine or writing an article or something?
Oh, yes. Yes, women and words. Think women and words. Yes, I have an article coming up on a site called Women and Words, and we're talking about the play and what it means. Yeah, women and words, and the impact of an Egyptian treasure. And you can find that on the 5th of November. That will go live.
Okay.
And now I can't remember where the... Hang on a minute. Yes. Hang on. Yeah, it's... the address is... It actually works. womenwords.org. That's W-O-M-E-N... WORDS.org, and that should be live on the 5th of November. Yeah. Before
great.
Before the play. Thank you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you for
yes.
talking
and,
about the play.
yeah, well, the thing is that I was asked to do it, and I was thinking, oh, that's a good idea. Let's
oh, yeah.
talk about an Egyptian treasure and what it all means and that sort of thing. And now I have to go and write it.
cool.
Now that I've finished the play,
finished it, you're ahead.
yes. So yeah. So that's coming up on the 5th of November. I don't think I'm not sure what's up next. I think I'm going back to writing Surviving the Peace and also Book 7, whose name I don't have at the moment. I'm vacillating
okay.
between two titles for that, but that's it so far from me.
Great, thank you.
And trying to keep sane.
Thank you for coming on, Mary. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.